Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
Welcome to the show, and I'm thrilled to have with me today Daryl Bates Brownsword. Good day, sir.
Good afternoon, Rob. How are you?
We're doing fantastic. Great to have you on the show, Daryl. Few people might not know who you are. You've got a wonderful name. Tell us a bit about you, your background, and how you got into this game.
Look, it is an English name. And the double-barreled hyphen came from my grandfather, who moved to Australia just before the First World War. Rumour has it is that he put the name there to try and make himself sound posh in Australia.
Okay.
My background is actually trained in mechanical engineering and worked in power stations. Figured out I wasn't real good at that. I'm not great at the detail level of things, and have spent the last 25 years working in the owner-led business world, where things happen a lot quicker than they do in the corporate world. So coaching, consulting, mentoring, all sorts of things of growth. More recently, focusing on helping business owners to leave and exit their businesses. So many of those owners, they've got the whole pension, if you like, invested in their business, and understanding and noticing that they didn't do any planning to capitalize on that. So that's the focus point that I've been working on the last year or so.
We'll dip into that a little bit more in the show. Sure. What's your connection with accountants then, Daryl? How did you dip your toes into that world?
Well, I think it's possibly because we've got a similar mindset with my engineering background, very logical, systematic approach to things. When I moved into the consulting world, I ended up working a lot with accountants and lawyers. I just found those environments challenging. You know, they got the best out of me, and working with those people, I found really engaging and rewarding as well. So I did a lot of my work with service-based professionals, including accountants and lawyers.
What do you find challenging about accountants?
They ask tough questions. You can't fool them easily, and they know their stuff. They know what they're doing. They're well-informed and well-educated. So you need to know your stuff when you're bringing it to them.
Sure. Now, accountants occupy that role as a trusted advisor to business owners. How well do you feel they serve the business community?
As a profession, it's been around for a long time. Yeah, on the whole, they're doing a fantastic job. The industry is going through a lot of change at the moment, and a number of your other guests have noticed that. And I think as professions, we need to move away from a product that really no one wants, they have to have, and start really working with their strengths and applying the data and the information they have and showing their clients how they can really use this information.
Yeah, you're talking about the move from compliance to advisory, aren't you?
Absolutely. Advisory is value add, you know, that the client really want. And as I say, they don't want compliance. They have to have compliance. What does that mean? Well, advisory, they'll pay for because they value it. Compliance, they see it as a commodity. So they just want to get that as cheap as they can.
Mm. So do you feel the accounting profession is in a good shape at the moment?
Look, I think it's mixed. See, I see a number of accounting practices actually thriving and making great profits and growing. And they're the ones who are prepared to challenge the status quo.
Yeah.
And there's a number who are resistant and reluctant to change and having a mindset of we are those trusted business advisors. We shouldn't have to change. They're the ones who are going to get bought out and taken over by the former.
Now, you're a specialist in succession planning. What's the definition of a succession plan, Daryl, in your eyes?
Great question. A succession plan is something that's not in your head. It's a real action step of knowing and written down and agreed with the other partners and owners or stakeholders in your business, the plan or the route to how you will exit your business, whether that be moving out of an income into a director type space or just a shareholder space. It's knowing what your journey is. It's plotted and mapped out and understood so everyone knows what's going to happen.
So succession really means what?
The next generation. You know, what I've called it in the past is I've said succession is all about how people move into your business, how they move through your business, and how they move out of it.
And that's the exit part of it, isn't it?
That's the exit, yeah. Succession also relates to the next generation. So it's normally applied to the next generation of family coming up through the business. But I see it as just training and developing people in your business. So the next layer of management may be being developed, but they may never actually end up owners. That is changing because there is a big push towards employee-owned type of the employee ownership schemes that are coming into play.
Why do companies need a succession plan?
The main reason to have a succession plan is to help you get the most out of your life's work. So many business owners tell me, I want want to exit my business, or I want to leave my business, or I want to hand over my business. And they often say something like, in 3 years' time is my exit.
Right.
And I go, great. Why 3 years' time? Well, 3 years' time, you know, that's about how much energy I've got left. And I go, great. What's your next step? And they give me a blank look. So what I've learned is that, you know, it's always 3 years, because 3 years is just far enough away where I don't have to do anything specific.
Yeah.
And you come back and you meet them the next year and you go, great, what's happening? Well, I'm going to leave in about 3 years' time and I haven't done anything. So if you've got a plan, you're much more likely to achieve it.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. And when I was just working with businesses and focusing on growth, many business owners would say they'd have a business plan. And similarly, you go, great, what's your business plan? Ah, it's in my head. Okay, well, what is it? Well, I'm going to grow the business. How? Well, I'm going to do more sales. When it's not written down, it's not thought through.
Mm.
So when you've documented your plan, whether it be a business plan, succession plan, or any other plan, when it's documented, you get the clarity.
And do you find from experience, Dale, when you talk to clients, that they think about succession and exit towards the end of their tenure rather than starting with the end in mind?
Well, I wish more of them did start with the end in mind. But yeah, look, most of them leave it to the last thing. Hey, and we're humans and we're entrepreneurs. Yeah. And what is it about entrepreneurs? We think we're invincible. We've got all the answers. We're going to push through and we see the bright picture and the pot at the end of the rainbow.
Yeah. But growth for growth's sake, everyone talks about growth. It can be meaningless, can't it? There are other metrics of success.
You've hit the nail there, Rob. Growth for growth's sake does become meaningless. I think that's come around just from the history of capitalism over the last few generations, where it's been very economic driven. And the metrics, if you like, on business success is, well, you know, the whole reason business is around is to increase the value to the shareholders. And I think, well, that's a great outcome, but it's only part of it. If you're recruiting someone for your business and you go, hey, the whole reason I want you in my business is to help me make more money, how's that going to inspire them? You're not going to get the best out of them. You hear a whole lot of talk about purpose-driven and mission and values, but why are we in business? What's the force that gets us up every day?
Mm.
And how do you use that to inspire you, to fuel you as a business leader, to inspire, you know, everyone in your business? Because they joined you for a reason in the beginning.
Yeah.
You had some big idea as an entrepreneur, as a business leader, and you basically influenced someone to join you. And they've gone, hey, I want to follow you on that journey. I like what you're doing. So they want to follow you. They also want to follow you and they want you to inspire that next generation. You're showing up to work every day and you know why you're there. You know what you're doing today, how it's connected to that end in mind. We've got to get back to purpose-led businesses and growth for growth's sake. We need to bring meaning back.
I get that and I'm totally on board with that. Growth drives multiples though, doesn't it, when you sell on?
Revenue partly drives multiples, absolutely. But there are a whole lot of non-tangibles involved as well that will increase the valuation of a business. And those multiples and other factors, the non-tangibles, if you like, are part of the things that contribute to a work environment that is a pleasure to be around. Yeah, and I'm talking about things like culture. And with great leadership, makes for a great business to be around. They don't sit on your balance sheet. But if you do have those things in place, chances are you've got a more profitable business. So you get that double whammy of if the business valuation is based on profit and a multiple, the formula increases on both of those parameters.
Mm. It's interesting what you say appears on the balance sheet. We did a podcast interview with Professor Baruch Lev, who wrote the book, The End of Accounting. And the essence of his approach is that the reports that accounting firms come out with, the audits, they're not fit for purpose in that they don't advise you on what's really valuable in the company. They don't talk about culture. They don't talk about investment in people, things like that, those intangibles.
I heard that podcast and I'd recommend it. I was totally engaged. I actually listened to it twice. I haven't bought the book yet, but as my business partner will tell you, I'm not a great reader. I'm a great listener. So that's why I enjoyed the podcast.
So when we look at towards the end of a life cycle of a business owner, we know about growth and multiples and everything else, but there's an element of legacy, isn't there? And hence the focus on meaning. What am I leaving behind? What's my footprint? What will people say about me after I've gone? How important is that?
I think that's particularly important to this mid-size, mid-tier marketplace. The business owners that we work with are the sort of people who tend to only exit their business once. The guys we work with aren't your serial entrepreneurs. They're the people who've built business up over a lifetime. And everyone in their business is particularly close to them. Yeah, they're like family. They're very close relationships.
Mm.
It's always one of the highest things on the agenda is how do we leave this legacy? We built this business for a reason and we want the next generation to continue with that. And there's a lot of pride in seeing that legacy move forward.
Sure. And just to clarify, Daryl, do you work with accounting firms to help them sell and exit, or do you work with the businesses that those accounting firms serve?
The latter, Rob. We work with the businesses directly. Having said said that, we partner with the other professionals who help with the business through that succession period. They need other advisors. They need to surround themselves with the right professionals to go through this transition in their life, including wealth managers or financial planners, advisors, depending where you are in the world. You need to get the legals right and you need to get the financials right to work on the valuation as well as your tax strategies.
So typically an accountant would bring you in and say, hey, Daryl, I've got this client. They're planning on exiting the business. Can you advise them? We can provide so much support, but we haven't got the specialist expertise that you have.
Yep, that's a typical scenario. They've already got a great relationship with the client. They know that we bring different areas of expertise that they don't work on. And typically what happens is we're working with the client and we can pre-sell the accountant to do some additional work for their client that the client didn't anticipate. It is, a transition they go through once in their career and they want to get it right. And it can make a big difference. The numbers, the exit value, when we put the groundwork up front, and sometimes we call it pre-due diligence, but getting it right and starting to look at the business the way that an investor will.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Now, you mentioned earlier, you wished more businesses would plan an exit earlier. When's the ideal time to start planning?
I like what you said earlier, Rob, where you said, if we begin with the end in mind, we're all going to exit our business one day, whether we like it or not. If we plan it, then we can leave on our terms. And everyone wants to leave or exit their business on their terms. Ideally, 3 to 5 years before you actually exit would be ideal. Mm-hmm. But often, businesses come to us and go, oh, what can you whip up in 12 months? But, we can help make it a lot less painful experience. Yeah, that exit process always takes longer than you think.
What do you mean by leaving on your terms, Daryl?
Well, if I've got a plan in place, I can stage my exit and ease myself out, because leaving my business that I've been involved with and passionate about for a big part of my life, I see myself and part of the business as one. So part of leaving the business is the emotional transition. Right. And the other part is the control and financial transition. So if I plan, I can leave on my terms. If I don't leave on my terms, worst case scenario is that dreaded bus comes around the corner. But I want that legacy so that, should that happen, I want to know that my family are looked after and my business partners and the business is looked after through the right agreements. And what we're talking about there is if my shareholding goes to my spouse, my wife, my business partners possibly don't want to be in business with her. That's what I mean by leaving on your terms, having everything set up and planned.
Yeah. And presumably when they get you involved early and they plan sooner, they've got more control, more say in proceedings and dictation over terms.
Totally. 100%. Yeah. We're forcing them to think about things they wouldn't be thinking about normally.
Like what?
Simple things like buy-sell agreements are often undervalued. How do I get out of my business? I heard an interesting quote the other day. The more I work in my business, the less it's worth. And I've gone, that's a really good summary. So all the things we look at are to get you out of the business. But what I mean by that is to make it so that the business doesn't rely on you being there. We don't want the business dependent on you being there. If I'm looking to buy your business, I don't want you there and you don't want to be there. Everything changes once you've relinquished control and you've sold out. And I've seen so many business owners over the year end up with the golden handcuffs. And, they go, I've got this earnout over 2 or 3 years. And after 6 months, they just realize that they just can't do it. Energetically, they can't be there. They can't be working for someone else. Everything's changed. And they just leave after 6 months and end up leaving a whole lot of cash on the table.
And are there triggers you see, Daryl, that tells you that a business is exitable? I'm thinking in terms of the people or operations, because there must be some businesses where there's no exit.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's, I guess, one of the things that we start with the clients we work with. We go, let's have a look at what the options are, because they possibly haven't considered or just aren't aware of all the options available. And I reckon there's 3 main journeys or 3 main options for a business owner to leave a business. And the first one is, as you say, there's just no exit. And if they know that there's no real exit and they've got nothing to sell, then the sooner they learn this, the sooner they can put an appropriate plan in place.
Right.
I mean by that is to have a cash strategy as much as possible, turn it into a cash cow as much as possible, and take the cash out and invest outside of their business.
Right.
So that way they've got a great pension that's being built up along the way, and that removes any stress. If they're thinking that they've got something to sell, even if it's just a minimal client base and they think it's worth a big wad of cash, and in reality it's not, they're in for a major stressful retirement and or pension, or realize that they can't leave, and no one wants that. So I reckon there's 3 main themes. There is what I call the gradual fade away, which is basically what we just discussed, gradually fade away where I've got no plan or I just become obsolete because I've been left behind. Could be a conscious thing or it could be an unconscious thing. The other one is where I go, hey, you know what? It could be a family next generation handover or it could be anything else. We call it the gradual step down. now. We put a plan in place where we gradually transition the generation out of the business and bring the new generation in. And that requires the training and the handover of skills and the upskilling and a gradual relinquish of control of the business, gradual step down. The other one is where we meet a number of business owners and they go, you know what? We've got a bit of energy left. We've been building this business for a number of years and there's something there. We want to go out. We've got one last hurrah.
Yeah.
Let's get all in. We bring in some advisors. We'll bring in a chunk of capital. We want to build the value up and then leave in a blaze of glory. So that's the step up where they've got some energy to have that one last swing. And within each of those three major themes, there's a whole lot of strategies on how to get the most out. So the first part of the process is let's figure out what the best approach is for you and your business and your situation and your partners and your industry and what have you and what works for you. Because there's no one right answer. So pulling all that together, you know when a business is exitable, and there's two areas to have a look at. The first one is energetically, the energy of the owners. Are they energetically ready to leave or start moving away? And the other one is the business ready? And then you've got also the financial considerations of the owner or owners. Now, we've got a process that we follow. It's a 21-step process that we have a look at all the steps that you need to put in place to help a business build its succession and exit plan. And some of those steps are looking at the legal, some of those are looking at the personal finances, and most of them are looking at all of the key criteria you need in the business to make sure that the business is ready and the owner's ready.
Mm.
Taking the owner through those steps helps them energetically get ready to leave their business because each step that they're going along the way, their confidence grows that their legacy is being left behind and that their legacy is in good hands. So there's no one magic element that you can measure and go, here, tick a box, this business is exitable, but you can get a view by asking a lot of questions and some analysis across those 21 steps.
I'm glad you mentioned the word confidence, Darrell, because there's a mental aspect to this, isn't there? The psychological side of it.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think we can underestimate that. That is the most important side. If you've built your business up over 20 years, it's kind of like having kids. You give birth to them, work through the early years, and at some point you need to hope that you've trained them in everything and you've educated them and you've given them values and disciplines and life skills. And hopefully one day they'll go off into the big wide world all by themselves and be valuable contributors to society. It's that same journey, I think, for a business owner where their business is their baby and at some point their baby grows up and leaves home or gets married or taking off and living their own life. If you've done a good job, and I think this is what the business owners really want, is that their business goes on to have a life without them. And that's a joy and something that's really tough at the same time.
Yeah.
My business doesn't need me anymore. That's the best result you can have.
Yeah. So we've talked a lot about the seller there. Tell us about the buyers and investors. What are they looking for, Darrell, in a succession or exit plan?
In cold, hard terms, they want to know that the business they're buying with the forecast in place and the valuation that they've agreed on, they're likely to get a return on their investment. That's the big one. And then depending on the type of buyer they are and their reason for buying, because people buy for different reasons. Sometimes they're buying to get access to a new market. Sometimes they're buying to get access to a new product to complement their existing suite. And sometimes they're just buying the skills of the people in the business. So everyone's buying for different reasons. And part of the job of the business broker, and we'll work with the business brokers sometimes, is to make sure that their questions and needs are being met and showing them how we've pre-addressed that or anticipated a lot of those needs through the 21-step program.
And with your Business Succession Plus, do you focus mostly on the sellers take their side or do you act on behalf of buyers and investors too? Is that a conflict?
No, look, our role is we're working with the sellers and that's the sellers that engage us and contract with us and we're working with them to get their business ready.
Mm-hmm.
We get it exit ready or exitable. That's who we're working with and that's our client.
And presumably scouting the market to find buyers is part of your remit?
Loosely. In the early stages, I can see that as an opportunity. But at the moment, we're working with a number of brokers as well. And they say, hey, look, we get a lot of businesses come to us who want to sell and they're just not ready to sell. And we say, well, you need to go away and get ready to sell and take 2 years and come back in 2 years. That's exactly our market. We're not selling them.
You mentioned earlier that most people only do this once and that seems reasonable. Where would they start? Does it start with a chat with their accountant or would they come to you directly, Darrell?
Some come to us directly through our own marketing, but given the accountant's position in the marketplace and that central position with, well, every business out there in that small and medium sector, mid-tier sector, that's likely to be the first place they'll go. As you mentioned, they are already the trusted advisor. It's already the portal of business knowledge. Where do I go to for this? Where do I go to for that? So yeah, most businesses would go to their accountant first.
Yeah, this is great, Daryl. If people want to get in touch with you, find out more about what you do and have a conversation about your services, what's a good way to reach you?
Best way to reach me is through our website, successionplus.co.uk, or you can find me on LinkedIn. That's the advantage of having a name like mine. There's only one Daryl Bates Brownsword on LinkedIn. And even if you get the spelling close, you'll find it. So Daryl Bates Brownsword on LinkedIn or successionplus.co.uk.
And a typical process with you would start with a conversation, would it? Perhaps a meeting and then start going through the 21-step plan once you're engaged?
What we do is we'll always have a conversation first and see if there's a good fit and what they're trying to achieve and if their timeframes are reasonable and possible and what have you. And we will start with a complete diagnosis. We call it a stage one report. And stage one report does a complete diagnosis of their business, has a look at their value, what a realistic value is today and a starting point. And then we go through measures, analyzing best practice and what else is happening out there. We can determine what they can achieve without changing their debt to equity, without changing their style too much. If they increase their risk, we can show them how to increase their value a bit more as well. But we show them what's realistically possible in a time frame. We go ahead and project manage and work with them to implement it. And we're all about getting the skills into the business. There's no point us doing it for them because the new owners want the skills in the business.
Yeah. And accountants, as we've talked about, how the trusted advisor, one of their roles is signposting them to great advisors like yourself that can bring in expertise that they themselves haven't got.
We'd like to hope so. And we've got a couple of accountants there that we're working with really well, and we work seamlessly with them. We don't do the finances ourselves. You know, we understand the finances, but that's not our role. So we need to work with accountants and, you know, the right finance professionals to guide their clients, because it's a big part of this process. So yeah, I think accountants are a great position to start proactively working with their clients. Yeah, a lot of them are already having these conversations and planning, but they don't always have the right context or contacts to point their people in the right direction, their clients. They know that there's a need there. And sometimes they go, hey, look, here's the guys you need to go to. We know these guys. Or sometimes they go, look, you need to go find the help. We'd love it if, yeah, we've got a relationship with a few more accountants, because we're quite ambitious in our growth plans to grow, you know, around the UK. We've already got operations in Australia, but we want to grow around the UK. We're fairly new in the UK, and we're ambitious as part of our succession plan to grow pretty quickly.
Global domination beckons.
Well, yeah, well, one country at a time.
You mentioned earlier quickly, Daryl, that there's a lot of extra work that an accountant could do for a client that's thinking of exiting that you can prime for them. Just tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, getting all the financials in order for a start, a lot of the basic compliance type finances are prepared just for the tax office, really. So there's a big opportunity to get proactive due diligence type numbers for a potential investor. And what we've found, and my business partner has got a lot of experience in this area, and she tells me, look, the more you've got the financials ready to go for an investor, as soon as they start asking for due diligence, the quicker you can get the information to them, the less painful the whole process. They find that if it's hard to get the numbers out, then everything else becomes harder. And we're calling it pre-due diligence. Yeah. The more you can get the information prepared in advance, so all of the history, all the cleaning up all of the accounts so that, you know, we take out all the ad backs. So we know that most business owners are taking a basic salary and being tax effective in the way they move money through the business. You know, when they're working with their accountant, they need to change that approach when they're looking to increase the valuation of a business. The sooner you start that cleanup, the better. So we need a couple of years of work there as well.
Very good. And finally, Daryl, what would you say to the accountants listening? Give them a bit of encouragement, advice on how they can start the conversation with clients around succession planning and exit.
So I think the first thing is to actually start the conversation and not wait to be asked. We all know that our clients need to exit their business at some time, and they need to start thinking about it. And it's similar to a will. We don't want to have the conversation, but we should if we want it to go smoothly. So if they can start having the conversation with their clients and knowing themselves what direction their clients are likely to take, that can help them with their day-to-day or year-to-year work with their clients that they're already doing. They can set up structures a certain way, knowing in anticipation the clients are going to exit down one route or another. So yeah, absolutely. My encouragement is the sooner you start having the conversation, it's a valuable conversation to have with your clients. It's not a reactive conversation like compliance. It's proactive. And when you're providing proactive conversations, you're adding value, because the clients will start going, hey, look, my accountant's fantastic because they're solving problems I didn't know I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Daryl Bates Brown, so that's been superb. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure, Rob. It's been great chatting with you.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world-class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.